from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice made her, I guess, maiden set of appearances on the Sunday Yak shows this week. Did I say maiden? Lebanon is in the news, so there's a lot of questions about Lebanon. Now, here's the only reason why I would like to be a television network news correspondent, because everybody who asked Condoleezza Rice questions about Lebanon focused on the timetable for the withdrawal of Syrian troops and on whether, as brooded about in a recent New York Times story, whether the United States would look kindly upon Hezbollah, up till now characterized by the United States as a terrorist organization, would look kindly upon Hezbollah being a part of the new Lebanese government scheduled to be elected sometime after the withdrawal of Syrian troops, you see. So Condoleezza Rice was saying the importance of getting Syrian troops out soon is so that the Lebanese can have a legitimate democratic election. You can't have, she said, a legitimate democratic election when you got foreign troops in your country. And the only reason I would like to go through the crap of being a television network news correspondent is so I could have asked the one question that nobody on the Sunday Yak shows did ask, which is, you mean like Iraq? Here's the good news, ladies and gentlemen. The general in charge of the Pentagon's faltering effort to develop a system for missile defense has ordered a thorough review of all ground equipment used in testing and approved a senior Navy officer to oversee future test preparations. That'll fix it. You see, we just didn't have a senior Navy officer in charge. How could we possibly make this thing work? The moves by Air Force Lieutenant General Henry A. Trey Obering III, I don't know if that means the first and second were also Trey, failed its test attempts in December and February to launch interceptor rockets. Both failures have been blamed on what defense officials say were minor glitches. So when millions die when the missiles come in, remember, it was just minor glitches that killed you. Also, there are such things as ghosts. Top military intelligence officials at Abu Ghraib came to an agreement with the CIA to hide certain detainees at the facility without officially registering them, according to the Washington Post's journalism. Keeping such ghost detainees is a violation of international law, which might explain the current disdain for international law. You know, if the choice is between law and ghosts, you know how people are going to vote. We like ghosts. Army Lieutenant Colonel Stephen Jordan, who was second in command of the intelligence gathering effort at Abu Ghraib while the abuse occurred, told military investigators that, quote, other government agencies, unquote, and a secretive elite task force routinely brought in detainees for a short period of time, and that the detainees were held without an internment number and their names were kept off the books. Ghost detainees were regularly locked in isolation cells, according to guards who worked at the prison, and they were kept from international human rights organizations. Well, of course. They weren't. They might want rights. What are you thinking? Finally, ladies and gentlemen, before we get rolling here, I love this story because it's impossible for me to imagine how either side would spin this. It's maybe why we haven't heard it widely. A former U.S. Marine who participated in capturing ousted Iraqi President Saddam Hussein said the public version of his capture was fabricated. This is from the Unification Church-owned wire service United Press International. Ex-Sergeant Nadim Abu Rabeh, of Lebanese descent. There is our Lebanese again. Pesky Lebanese, all through the week's news. He was quoted in a Saudi daily newspaper as saying Saddam was actually captured Friday, December 12th, and not the day after, which was the official date according to the U.S. Army. I was among the 20-man unit, including eight of Arab descent, who searched for Saddam for 3 days in the area of Dur, near Tikrit, and we found him in a modest home in a small village, and not in a hole, Abu Rabeh said. We captured him after fierce resistance, during which a Sudanese Marine of Sudanese origin, was killed. He said Saddam himself fired at them with a gun from the window of a room on the second floor. Then they shouted at him in Arabic, "You have to surrender. There's no point in resisting." Later on, he continued, A military production team fabricated the film of Saddam's capture in a hole, which was, in fact, a deserted well. He was interviewed in Lebanon. So let's get those Syrian troops out so we can find out what really happened. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Just like Iraq. Hello, welcome to the show.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. What a little moonlight can do. Cause your poor tongue just will not utter the words I love you. Ooh, ooh, ooh. What a little moonlight can do. Wait a while till a little moonbeam comes peeping through. You can't resist her, and all you say when you have kissed her is, ooh, 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 what a little moonlight can do.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this week's edition of the show. It's a little different here today. We're celebrating the advent of podcasting. You should pardon the expression. Always you should pardon the expression of the show. Being filmed here, or taped, actually. This is tape. They don't use film anymore. Haven't since Dan Rather arrived at CBS. They're being taped for CNN. And it is so hard to say what feelings can arise knowing that we may end up on Newsnight around the world. Anyway, we have to press on despite all of that. I mentioned Dan Rather because, of course, everybody mentioned Dan Rather this week. It was his swan week. His sign-off included, to the surprise of you, I doubt it, the word courage, and an awful lot of looking back. CBS did a one-hour retrospective called Dan Rather, A Reporter Remembers, with Dan retrospecting over video highlights of his career. And it seemed to me it left only one thing to be done, and that's to remember the rest of the story.
Dan Rather. A viewer remembers.
Soweto, South Africa. Nelson Mandela about to be returned to his home.
All right. Are they rolling, Tom? Oh, I'll tell you, this is some deal here. Yeah. Come on. You have a brush? If you stand on top of that thing, just stand on top of this thing here. Okay.
The wind is playing frantically there.
Yeah.
You're looking good though.
Okay. Okay, thanks. Look at it this way, you won't work under these conditions just every day.
I think the wind is so strong it's a losing cause.
Okay.
You just get it in and you're not shining.
Yeah. Okay. Before you lose this light, let's try to do a lead to Simon's Cape Town piece if you think we're going to end the broadcast with that, and a new close to the broadcast. Because the light's better.
For lead to Simon, Cape Town, where what if we say that? This is an enormous country, and Cape Town, where...
Tom has showed up here now. Right there. Isn't that Tom Brokaw right there?
This is an enormous country in Cape Town, where Mandela spent most of his day, is one of the most beautiful spots on this earth. A land of hopes and fears, as Bob Simon reports.
Not from Cape Town, just as Bob Simon reports. Okay, South Africa is a huge country.
In Cape Town, where Mandela spent most of his day.
Cape Town's as good as it gets in South Africa. Go ahead.
Is dramatically different from
the rest of the country.
It is dramatically different from Johannesburg, from Soweto.
Okay.
It is one of the most beautiful spots on earth.
Okay.
And a land of hopes and fears.
Okay. Okay. South Africa is a huge, beautiful country, complex and dangerous. Cape Town, where Nelson Mandela spent most of his day. A land of great contrast. For example, Soweto, to where Nelson Mandela is coming home, is light years away. Cape Town is almost like that. Bob Simon. Okay, you rolling? Everybody going? South Africa is a huge, beautiful country, complex and, yes, dangerous, and a land filled with contrasts. For example, the difference between Soweto, the home to which Nelson Mandela is coming, and Cape Town, where he spent most of this day. Bob Simon puts that into perspective for us. Again, two. South Africa is a huge, beautiful country, complex and, yes, dangerous, and a land filled with contrasts. For example, the difference between Soweto, to whom... Three, take three. South Africa is a huge, beautiful country, complex and, yes, dangerous, and a land filled with contrasts. For example, that between Soweto, to where Nelson Mandela is coming home, and Cape Town, where he spent most of this day. Bob Simon puts that into perspective.
Okay.
Question. Sometimes it's better. I did not wash my hair last night because I thought a certain amount of stiffness would probably help it. What do you think?
It looks good today.
Okay.
It looks thicker.
Okay. The question is whether to wash you for tomorrow, but we'll make that decision as we go along, I guess. Okay, thanks.
Stiffness did help. Ladies and gentlemen, news from the digital wonderland. The sharp picture quality that wows you on that expensive HD TV isn't necessarily what you'll see once you get the set into your living room. This according to CNET News. In some cases, retailers run video into the sets from closed-circuit networks. The practice may be distorting customer expectations. There's no doubt that there are higher return rates on HD sets than analog television, says Mike Vitelli, Senior Vice President of Best Buy. Some haul their expensive sets home only to get hit by a case of buyer's remorse. Then there's the issue of video source. It should almost be illegal to buy an HD set unless you can prove you have HD service, he said. Vitelli and other retail executives don't want to kill the golden goose, still creating the ideal HD viewing experience for consumers has posed its difficulties. After spending thousands of dollars on fancy new high-definition televisions, owners commonly don't even watch shows in HD, according to a principal research analyst, Bruce Leichtman. Call it cognitive dissonance or ignorance is bliss, but most households, about two-thirds, aren't watching shows in HD, even though they think they are. That would be, ladies and gentlemen, testimony to how dramatic the difference is. I don't think people bought color sets, then watch black and white, thinking they were watching color. Do you? Vitelli isn't surprised at that research. I would agree with that guesstimate without even seeing the data. The disconnect between having an HD set and not watching shows in HD, experts say, must be bridged by making it clear that consumers need HD programming and can conveniently get it. Consumers, ladies and gentlemen. But on the other hand, see, then that makes the glass look half American. Now the glass looks half Canadian. Dateline Toronto. Canada is falling too far behind the United States in the creation of high-definition television content, and there's no coherent national strategy to improve the situation. This is according to Michael McEwen, president of Canadian Digital Television. Boy, those are two curses right there, if not three. Canadian digital television, ladies and gentlemen. If you really add up the amount of Canadian content available over the course of the year, it's in the hundreds of hours of high definition. Whereas if you look at what's available in the United States, he says, it's in the thousands of hours, he says. McEwen's point is that this represents yet another U.S. threat to the economic and cultural foundation of Canada's broadcast industry. Threat to the culture, don't you know? The fine Canadian culture. All right. We made enough fun. No, we haven't. No, because now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Many Canadian apologies coming up, but first, U.S. District Court Judge Joseph DiClerico sentenced Charles Chuck McGee of Concord, New Hampshire, to 7 months in a federal minimum security pen. Also fined him $2,000 and 200 hours of community service. I made a mistake and will pay for my mistake, McGee told the newspaper, and I'm going to come back and elect good Republicans. During the hearing, his lawyer told the judge his client is never going to work in politics again. McGee last July admitted to developing and carrying out a scheme to block get out the vote phone bank lines at five state Democratic offices in New Hampshire and at the nonpartisan Manchester Professional Firefighters Association for more than an hour on the morning of the 2002 election. He pleaded guilty to a felony charge of conspiring to violate a federal law. He claimed not to be the ultimate decision maker, blame being pushed on former GOP State Chairman John Dowd and former National Republican Senatorial Chairman Bill Frist. McGee admitted paying $15,000 to GOP Marketplace of Virginia, whose former president hired an Idaho telemarketing firm to make computerized hang-up calls to the phone banks to disrupt their efforts. I was selfish, I was desperate, McGee said. He turned to state Democratic officials in the courtroom and apologized. I wanted to win. I tried to gain an edge. In the heat of the moment, I made a terrible decision. Dateline Wilmington, Delaware, a place to be somebody, as you know from my recent visit there. A former aide to U.S. Senator Joseph Biden has been sentenced to 3 years in prison for stealing more than $400,000 in campaign funds, partly to buy gifts for men he met through the Internet. Roger Blevins III wanted to play sugar daddy to three Florida men he met online, according to the prosecutor. Blevins apologized in court this week, saying his actions were, quote, stupid, ignorant, and wrong. That's the magic trinity. Dateline Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. During the Reformation in the 16th and 17th century Switzerland, the Swiss Reformed Church persecuted Anabaptists until they knuckled under to church authorities. If they refused to renounce their belief in adult baptism, the church drowned or beheaded them. It boiled them in oil. It burned them alive. This is Europe we're talking about. Thousands of the beleaguered Anabaptists eventually fled to Pennsylvania, Lancaster County. Now Reformed Church leaders feel guilty about the atrocities nearly 500 years later. They want to make amends. Nearly 20 Swiss Reformed Church leaders will travel to Lancaster to ask for forgiveness from Mennonites, Amish, and other Anabaptists. Paul Verreguth, a Swiss Reformed Church pastor in Zurich, apologized there and will apologize in Pennsylvania for preaching in a church built on land stolen from Anabaptists. Now to the Canadian apologies, because they're so damn good. Dateline Ottawa, a Canadian member of Parliament charged with improving ties with the United States, apologized this week for saying, let's embarrass the hell out of the Americans in front of other countries. Marlene Jennings, the Parliamentary Secretary for Canada-U.S. Relations, said, I would apologize to the members of this House that my comments were a little bit exaggerated. I apologize. Rapper Ja Rule stood politely with his hands clasped behind his back in a Toronto courtroom as his lawyer entered a guilty plea to an assault charge. His real name is Jeffrey Atkins. Rapper Ja Rule flew to Toronto from Australia to be in court. That, ladies and gentlemen, that's punishment enough, that flight. His attorney said the client was disappointed with himself because, quote, he is a role model to young people, adults around the world, and he made his mistake. He hopes his fans will forgive him for it and move forward just as he plans to do. Ja Rule, ladies and gentlemen. I just want to say, you know, he said, I apologize to the city of Toronto. I'm just sorry about my actions, and you know, I pled guilty, and I stepped up to the plate today. Yes, they do play baseball in Canada. And an opposition member of the Saskatchewan legislature has been stripped of his duties after suggesting to constituents that the premier of Saskatchewan, Lorne Calvert, be shot. Saskatchewan party member Jason Dearborn quickly apologized for his remark. I would counsel no violence toward anyone, he said this week. And that's the difference in the culture. They apologize even more than we do. The manager of a New Brunswick pub has fired a bouncer for ordering female customers to flash their breasts during a Mardi Gras celebration in New Brunswick on International Women's Day. There's so much wrong with that. The firing came about a day after a young woman raised concerns about what she described as a sexually charged and intimidating Mardi Gras party. I asked for a drink. Oh, no, she wanted beads. She asked for beads. And the bouncer replied, it's Mardi Gras, sweetie. Show me your breasts and you'll get one, she said. It was like being slapped in the face almost. It was a huge shock. Well, that's a common practice during Mardi Gras in New Orleans. Miss Lindsay Gallant said that doesn't excuse the bouncer's behavior. She said she was so upset she couldn't sleep when she arrived home. Jim Cooper, general manager of the pub, contacted her this week to apologize. We take full responsibility for any derogatory comments made by our staff, and for that I apologize endlessly. Endlessly. We'll check back on him in a few years just to see. And a couple more, ladies and gentlemen, because there's so many apologies. A man who was stopped by Denver police and had his marijuana confiscated received an apology because the man was allowed to smoke the pot for medicinal purposes. He got an apology from police. And scheduled to fight local drag queen Daisy D in a professional wrestling match in Portland? No, sorry, at Fort Lauderdale. Tonya Harding refused to get into the ring. The former figure skater-turned-boxer supplied color commentary on 5 wrestling matches from a balcony instead. She apologized to the crowd, citing state boxing commission regulations that could jeopardize her boxing career if she took part in the promotion. You don't want Tonya Harding to do anything, ladies and gentlemen, to jeopardize her career. That would be so wrong. The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Don't you know?
Dan Rather. A viewer remembers.
He's at a flood site in Iowa.
Well, I'm going to be a fenced out here. Guys, I'm going to be so quick out, but I thank you for all your help. I'm going to be going like a shot. Thanks for your help. Appreciate it. Glad to work with you. Hope we'll get to work again. Thank you. And Al, I appreciate all your help. This is a heartbreak for me, one which I do not intend to have repeated. But, you know, tonight is not the time to talk about it.
Can you and I talk about it tomorrow? Would you like to do that?
You know, not particularly. Frankly, I want to blow it out. I think, you know, we all know. I mean, you know, it's simple. I think it's not time. One, despite all the talk, I didn't talk to the EP at not one point today. I spent 5 hours, basically, today doing this. Now, we dropped the piece, and I had no idea the Clinton thing was going to run 35 seconds, or I would not have done it today. And then I was just taking a pass as ABC. And I don't understand that decision, quite frankly. And, you know, I'm not going to kid anybody, and mostly I'm not kidding myself, that I got big problems. You know, I don't like it. I don't like to go through a week like this and feel like I feel walking out of this. And that's my problem. But it's very quickly going to become somebody else's problem. But I can't walk on. There was, as far as I can see, we took care of Deborah Norville. We took care of Schlesinger. We took care of everybody. Now, I'm looking for folks, and I'm looking for a broadcast that gives some thought to take care of me. I come back with no apology with it. You know, Connie doesn't put up this for a second. Mike doesn't put up this for a second. Nobody. And, you know, I'm kind of stunned about the whole thing. But at any rate, I'm gone and that's that. I'm sorry, I'm working. I beg your pardon. I want to help. Want to do what I can, and I'll do what I can later. Thank you. But that's that. I mean, once again today, I'm sort of in a stunned stupor. I was under the impression. It turns out to be a mistaken impression. I thought we'd cut the Clinton thing short, but 35 seconds is a soundbite. And if you add up, we left this morning realistically at 8. And, I would like some assurance somewhere along the line that somebody actually looked at the hospital piece. And, you know, I hope we do well. We may do well. I didn't, you know, maybe me, but I didn't see anything in the broadcast that I thought was not the way. And there's something really wrong here, and I will fix it.
Did he fix it? The answer moments from now on Le Show.
There ought to be a moonlight saving time, so I could love that man of mine till the birdies wake and chime good morning. There ought to be a law in clover time to keep that moon out over. for time to keep each lover's lane in rhyme till dawning. You'd better hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, get busy today. You'd better croon a tune, croon a tune to the man up in the moon. And here's what I'd say. There ought to be a moonlight saving time so I could love that man of mine till the birdies wake and chime. Good morning, moonlight saving time, moonlight saving time, moonlight saving time.
This is Le Show. Unintended consequences time. The Army's wartime recruiting challenge is aggravated by a sharp drop in black enlistments in the last 4 years. Internal Army and Defense Department polls trace that drop in black enlistment to the fact that the war in Iraq is unpopular with African Americans. And concerns among blacks with Bush administration policies. Who would it? Go figure, Department. The Army strains to meet recruiting goals in part because black volunteers have fallen 41% from 23% of recruits in 2000 down steadily to 13% in the first 4 months of fiscal 2005. Says Major General Michael D. Rochelle, commanding general of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command, quote, "It's alarming." He is one of the Army's most senior black officers. No single factor explains the drop, Rochelle added, but clearly the propensity of black youth to enlist is impacted by the war and increasingly by views of parents, teachers, coaches, clergy, and other, quote, influencers, unquote. Officer recruiting is hit, too. Number of African Americans in the ROTC is down 36% since 2001. Marine Corps also reports a drop in black recruits. But they're stymied in terms of the accuracy of their data because there's a government policy now that allows recruits and all new federal workers to decline to identify their race. The Army has found a way to continue to track accurately its racial data. We don't know how that is. And in a related story from the Baltimore Sun, Naval Academy officials expressed concern over decline in minority applicants from last year, though the decline was consistent with an overall drop in applications. Oh, that's okay then. Everybody's refusing. Minority applications for the Academy's class of 2009 fell 22.5% from the year before. That drop only slightly exceeds an overall 21% decline in applications to the school from people of all races. Ladies and gentlemen. And apropos of what we discussed last week about the fine progress we're making in Afghanistan, Stephen McQueen had been based in Kabul since June 2003, heading up the World Bank's Microfinance Investment and Support Facility for Afghanistan. This is from the Glasgow Sunday Herald. That job involved making small amounts of credit available to peasant farmers to break their reliance on the lucrative poppy crops that end up as heroin. McQueen was the nuts and bolts of the promise that the invasion of Afghanistan would stamp out the heroin trade. Last Monday night, he was gunned down in a Kabul street. Afghanistan is quickly slipping into a narco state where control of the opium crop is power and the gun determines life and death. There are signs that the killing of McQueen was far from random, but an audacious, well-organized hit. His car was overtaken by a black Toyota Land Cruiser, which then blocked his path and set in chain a textbook vehicle ambush. The Afghan intelligence service is leading the investigation. There are no suspects and no motives. Part of the trouble is the murder vehicles. Darkened Land Cruisers with tinted windows are the vehicle of choice for the bad guys and the good guys in Afghanistan. Ladies and gentlemen. So, then Dan starts co-anchoring with Connie Chung.
Dan Rather. A viewer remembers.
Does she say this?
Yeah, she says that. You stop it there and she says it.
I just say goodnight, Connie.
Yeah, goodnight. Goodnight, Dan. Goodnight. Yeah.
I think if we're up here, that it sounds funny here. I'm not pressing it. I'm not looking at her time. Good night, Dan. Good night, Connie. Good night, everybody. She said, good night, Dan. I say, good night, Connie. Then she says, good night, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's check with Eric. Is what okay. He planned.
Eric, is Eric on or is this Al?
Eric, can you take incoming or not yet? Al, the question is on the close. I got it down to the point where Connie comes in. Now, Connie says, good night, Dan. Good night, everybody, and see you tomorrow. Al, just reviewing. We go down to the CBS Evening News, reporting for CBS Evening News. Then Connie has a promo for tomorrow or something, right? And then she says goodnight, Dan, right? Sure, go ahead, no problem. I got you. Okay, so when they know this, then I'm going to say goodnight, Connie. And then she says goodnight, Dan. Goodnight, everybody. See you tomorrow. In other words, after I say goodnight, Connie, the rest of it's hers. Right. Right. Okay. A new Range Wars. This is the Chisholm Trail, right?
It's Chisholm Trail.
I get these trails confused, you know. That's
Chisholm.
All right.
Chisholm Trail.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The new Range Wars in the Old West, part of our world tonight. From where the old Chisholm Trail meets the banks of the Brazos in Waco, Texas, Dan Rather reporting for the CBS Evening News. Good night, Connie. Quietly tell them that if she has time, I'd love to talk to Connie on this phone when she's finally clear.
Yeah.
I think the karma is not good.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure of it, but I want to talk to her.
No problem.
And moonlight, it's so easy when you're in love. When you have someone to cling to, when your heart is not your own, moonlight, It's so hard when you are lonely. When you are your one and only. When there's no one else to share. Oblivious to others. When there's stardust in the air and moonlight. Like the moment when love found you. And all around astounds you. Keeps me wishing you were here. Wishing you were here. Wishing you were here. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you're an anchor for a Big Three television network newscast, ladies and gentlemen, you have to get the news any way you can.
Dan Rather. A viewer remembers.
Primary night in New Hampshire.
Okay. Now, where are we going to put that, Janet? Jeff has to decide. We have to lose something. We can't go through this whole broadcast and not tell folks something. We'll have all the latest on the New Hampshire primary, who won and why, plus behind-the-scenes insights on a one-hour CBS News special report later tonight. That'll be at 8 o'clock, 7 Central Time. For right now, Dan Rather with Bob Schieffer and others in New Hampshire. We'll see you again soon in this very tight race. Well, I'll tell you that my biggest problem right here is information. We've had zero information. Now, somebody's got to break the logjam. We have a technical problem. We have an information flow problem. Lane, are you with me? Hop on the editorial side of this, if you will. I mean, this business, I understand keeping secrets from the viewer. I don't understand keeping secrets from me. No, it's not you. I mean, some information is coming in here. We have gotten some information since 7 o'clock. Well, what are we going to do right now? Okay, that's all I was asking. Scott,
yes.
Is there any chance we can get CNN here? If I can't get any,
work on it.
Ask if I can get CNN on this monitor.
Guys,
if not, just get a portable set.
I'll work. What kind of information are you not getting?
I'm getting none. It's not.
I don't understand that.
I mean, zero. I have no idea. I have nothing since. Really, since 6:25, I have received nothing.
Okay. Well, let me see what I can do here.
That somebody somewhere has, you know, has tallied up. If nothing else, give me the votes counted.
I will, right now.
Dan?
Yeah.
Dan, they can't just pop it in. They're going to try to run another line in for us.
Okay. It's Dan Rather. Is Andrew Haywood there? Is Susan Zirinsky there? Elaine. You're the fellow I'm trying to reach, actually.
Yeah,
look. The problem here, Lane, is we have a total, and I mean total, blockage of information. I have not received one word of exit poll information since about 6:25. Okay.
You have CNN now, Dan, on the floor monitors. I have no audio. There's no audio, I don't think.
Okay, well, at least we see the boards.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Now, ask audio. Is there any way audio? I have CNN picture on the floor, but I don't have CNN audio. And I understand we can't get it to the floor. The question is, can you give me CNN audio in my ear? If it's a big deal, I don't need it that badly. If it's easy.
To give Dan CNN audio.
Okay, then forget even trying.
You got the picture.
Not necessary.
I thought the question was whether to wash the hair tomorrow night. That was a different question, I guess. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to feel fearful. Won't you join me?
Let's get scared.
With surprising and mysterious regularity, life on Earth has flourished and vanished in cycles of mass extinction every 62 million years. This according to two UC Berkeley scientists who discovered the pattern after a painstaking computer study of fossil records going back for more than 500 million years. Their findings are certain to generate a renewed burst of speculation among scientists who study the history and evolution of life. Each period of abundant life and each mass extinction has covered at least a few million years, and the trend of biodiversity has been rising steadily ever since the last mass extinction, about 65 million years ago. The Berkeley researchers are physicists, not biologists or geologists or paleontologists or phrenologists. But they have analyzed the most exhaustive compendium of fossil records that exists. And so why bother? Why care? 2 million Britons could die in the bird flu pandemic that experts warn is both imminent and inevitable. One of Britain's leading authorities told a British Sunday newspaper, trying to scare its readers. Professor Hugh Pennington, the professor of the Society for General Microbiology, said the number of deaths has been greatly underestimated. He expects the flu, like the 1918 pandemic, to cause the deaths of many people from pneumonia, which we're still not good at treating. If the virus moves into people, there will be no stopping it. It will be here before we know it, he said. But, you know, a few million years later, life will return. Relax.
You're all dressed up to go dreaming. Now don't tell me I'm wrong. And what a night to go dreaming. Mind if I tag along? Moonlight becomes you. It goes with your hair. You certainly know the right thing to wear. Moonlight becomes you. I'm thrilled at the sight, and I could get so romantic tonight. You're all dressed up to go dreaming. Now don't you tell me I'm wrong. What a night to go dreaming. Mind if I tag along? And if I say I love you, I want you to know it's not just because there's moonlight, although moonlight becomes you. So
Dan Rather, a viewer remembers
the site of the Oklahoma City bombing. 1 year later.
Okay, show me the wall. I can handle this prompter here. That's not a problem.
Here, down here, and I stop right here.
And it's
stop
right at the yellow.
Right before you get to the yellow.
Right. Okay.
And after the word strangers, turn here.
Right.
And walk to this camera.
Okay, so that's a slight look down and then begin walking to this camera. Okay, this camera is tougher.
Is it?
Yeah. But you know what? How much time to air time?
About 10 minutes.
Let's rehearse one with prompter. Does prompter hear us, Scott? Tonight, as this city prepares to mark that sad day, you will see what the bombing has meant for them. Now, Scott, are we ready for prompter rehearsal? Okay. Good evening from Oklahoma City. 1 year ago tomorrow, 168 men, women, and children were violently killed by one act of hate. It happened behind this fence in a federal building shattered by a bomb. Now, this fence is lined with personal memorials, tributes left by friends and strangers. Tonight, as this city prepares to mark that sad day, you will see what that bombing has meant for Oklahoma City. Okay, what I need to do is memorize this little piece of copy, which I can do.
Okay. Will it work for you?
Yeah, it'll work. Okay. It'll work. But I need to memorize this because by the time I can't quite handle the throw here.
Okay.
But by the time I get here, I'm within range. And this is what? This is leading to Pelley's piece.
Right. Yes. This is the open of the broadcast
of being one of our country's worst mass murderers. And then up comes
the Pelley piece.
Pelley piece. Okay.
Then you'll stay here.
In the next piece, is there any walk, any throw, any distance that needs
to be? Everything else you do is right from...
To Legatuda.
Right. To Legatuda, it's right from here.
And the next piece, same thing?
Same thing.
It's taped. This is you. Your voice.
Okay, how much time to air?
8 minutes.
Then let me get this memory work done.
I'm going to run upstairs and I'll talk to you in your ear.
Okay, great. I may have a prompter rehearsal. Are you geared to handle that, Scott? Are you running prompter?
No, we can do that. We can handle that.
Okay.
We can handle
that. Well, give me a second here to get this memorized. Because I see what he wants to do. Tonight, as this city prepares to mark that sad day, you will see what that bombing has meant for Oklahoma City. Tonight, as this city prepares to mark that sad day, you will see what that bombing has meant for Oklahoma City. Tonight, as this city prepares to mark that sad day, you will see what the bombing has meant for Oklahoma City. Tonight, as this community prepares to mark that sad day, you will see what the bombing has meant for Oklahoma City. Okay. Eric, I'm inclined. I don't know. What does the script look like? I don't need the script, but if the prompter were to break down, I guess they just ad lib it. Well, Eric, the question is, how distracting is the hand copy? Bill?
Yes, sir.
Pop and get me a reporter's notebook.
Yes, sir.
Will you? Yeah, well, Bill's going to go get one here. Let's go back to the top of prompter. Give me, how much time to air, Scott?
5 minutes.
I wouldn't mind rehearsing this one more time. Tonight, as the city prepares to mark that sad day.
Ready.
Okay. Good evening from Oklahoma City.
1 year ago tomorrow, 168 men, women, and children were violently killed by one act of hate. It happened behind this fence in a federal building shattered by a bomb. Now, this fence is lined with personal memorials, tributes left by friends and strangers. Tonight, as this city prepares to mark that sad day, you will see what the bombing has meant for Oklahoma City, for the families left behind, and for our country. We begin more than 650 miles from this spot as we take you to meet the man accused of being one of America's worst mass murderers. Okay.
Larry, do me a favor?
Yeah.
Can you just move the monitor?
No, it's very comfortable. I just have to retain those two graphs in my memory here. Tonight, as this city prepares to mark that sad day. Now, let's get ourselves oriented, right? I want to make sure we don't make a mistake. We are talking about the building being back here.
The Murrah building is back there.
Right here?
Yes.
Right? Behind this fence.
That's right.
Okay. We can get this done then.
Never too late to find out where the building is, ladies and gentlemen. That's my motto. Strange how the taste of sausage can be affected by watching the manufacturing process, isn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshear.com and kcrw.com, on channel 108 at Sirius Satellite Radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow, and now available as a podcast. Look it up, babe, at kcrw.com. And it would be just like figuring out all those different technologies if you'd agree to join with me. If you'd agree to join with me then, I'm going to find out where that building is. I think it's behind this fence. Would you do that? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Candy Crowley, a headline, please. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.